Religion on the Line. 2 hours of exploration into the world of spirituality, faith, hope, love, or the hot buttons of today. Talk about it now. 576-7710. And now, Religion on the Line.
Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here in the heart of the country, and as you are in our hearts as well. We hope that you know how much we appreciate you allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning here and across the land as we engage in a conversation about religion, faith, belief, power, and how we relate to that which we worship and how we worship. And all the rest, everything in between. Give us a call at 576-7710, 576-7710. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl, the Social Justice Consultant for the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
And Michael, a good morning to you. We hope and trust that it is as beautiful there as it is here. We have a gorgeous sunrise to greet us as Bill and I came in this morning. Mm. Hopefully it'll be just as beautiful all the rest of the day.
And well, I happen to have long ago seen sunrise at 7 o'clock in Pittsburgh, where we're having a little family gathering for the holiday weekend. Grandchildren scattered in various bedrooms as we're all in our older daughter's home, sleeping in various unique spots.
Well, and Karen's with you, of course, right?
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, thanks to the family, to your oldest daughter and son-in-law, as well as the grandchildren, for loaning you for this brief stint here.
Well, I'm not sure they're even aware of it because everybody's asleep.
All right. Well, what is on your radar this morning, or
do you have topics?
I've
got a few items to throw in there, and I'm confident that folks, whether they're in Topeka or the greater Kansas City area, will decide to ignore them. Perhaps. We'll see. One, I was intrigued, and I was also especially intrigued because I didn't see any commentaries. I did an itty-bit of research on this. When Melania Trump went to Saudi Arabia, she did not put a head covering on, and that was made something of a deal, because when Michelle Obama had gone, President Trump had criticized her for not going along with local custom, and then Melania, in her visit with the Pope, is it a mandala? Is that what it's called, Bill? You know, that which covers the hair, the black.
You know, that's an old tradition, I think that might be the name in some cultures, of just a head covering or a scarf.
Okay.
Chapel veil is a lot of times what I've heard it called as well.
Okay. Well, the interesting thing to me was that why there and not in Saudi Arabia, and what someone in researching it suggests is that it's a matter of protocol, that a non-Muslim is not required to cover her head, but that a person in a visit with the Pope would be, a woman would be expected to do so. And it led me to the question, do any of us know, is Melania a Catholic in her own religious commitment?
Well, that was one of the surprises that came out of this visit, is she revealed she is Catholic. So it wasn't really known until she shared, she was so moved by the visit with the Pope, she did reveal that, yes, she is Catholic, making her the second Roman Catholic First Lady to meet the Pope after, of course, Jackie Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do remember Jackie Kennedy wearing that same head covering in her visits in Rome with the Pope.
But I think Nancy Pelosi wore
that. Mystery solved, maybe. on Tuesday night, a Jewish holiday that begins 50 days after Passover. We stand at Shavuot, or Pentecost, as it's called in English, and there certainly is a Christian parallel. But this particular holiday, which marks in tradition the revelation at Mount Sinai and the giving of the Ten Commandments, etc., has just a wondrous idea, which is an all-night study. What did we used to call them in college? All-nighter.
Right? All-nighter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's called Tikkun Leil Shavuot, and traditionally one studies from a piece from each of the various pieces of Jewish wisdom and literature, etc., throughout the night until the rising of the sun, in the notion of being eager in preparation for remembering Sinai. That's just curious if anybody would want to know more about that, and as well the parallels in Christian tradition to Pentecost. Then I've got a few other things. One, interracial marriage is on the rise in the U.S. That, I think, is a very hopeful and positive sign. I wonder if anybody has any other thoughts on that. Two, did either of you read about or even hear the whole speech that Mayor Landrieu of New Orleans gave?
This is the fourth time somebody has kind of referenced that, and I have not seen it, although I have it in my possession four times. Have you seen it?
So let me just read a small excerpt. You ready?
Yeah.
These statues are not just stone and metal. They are not just innocent remembrance of a benign history. Now, this is a man of the South, right? These monuments purposely celebrate a fictional, sanitized Confederacy, ignoring the death, ignorance, the enslavement, and the terror that it actually stood for. The statues were erected some years after the South was defeated in the Civil War under the influence of the Cult of the Lost Cause. This cult had one goal, through monuments and through other means, to rewrite history, to hide the truth, which is that the Confederacy was on the wrong side of humanity. It goes on. It's absolutely eloquent and remarkable in terms of its source and its conviction. We don't get much of that nowadays, mm-hmm. It seems. Now, here's in the category of, wow, shameless appeal to public health. This is from the Wall Street Journal this week. Gun lobby wants to ease silencer buying. Did either of you see this one?
No.
Okay. The National Rifle Association, which typically rests its case on the Second Amendment and personal security, is framing legislation that would make it easier to buy gun silencers as a public health issue.
You're kidding.
I'm going to read you one more paragraph, and then you'll find out how that becomes a public health issue.
Unbelievable.
The NRA's campaign includes rebranding silencers as suppressors because they don't completely silence the sound of gunfire. Silencers reduce the average firearm noise from 165 decibels to below the potentially dangerous level of 140 decibels.
It goes from 160 to 140.
It would be, isn't it? It's just, talk about shameless commerce division of car talk. Okay.
Do they understand? Do folks understand that that's just a way to make money? I mean, that...
Also, a way to get away with crime.
Yeah, and a way to get it would even enhance criminals. God.
Oh well.
Wow.
Now here's what I'd love for somebody. I have not had a chance to check this one out. I'm hoping this is just fake news. The headline: Adoption Bill Ignores Science, Parenting Experts Say. In case the bill Texas senators passed early Monday, the one allowing publicly funded foster care and adoption agencies to turn away non-Christian, unmarried, or gay prospective parents becomes some sort of ugly trend. That's the first sentence. And, it's an editorial. I mean, I can imagine the challenge that we've had about whether agencies that are specifically associated with particular religious groups have to conform or are able to maintain their own particular conviction in any of their services, but this one, that publicly funded foster care and adoption agencies may turn away non-Christian couples.
Unbelievable. The Attorney General's office in Texas would say, hey, stupid, that would be unconstitutional.
Well, somewhere along the way, I think that might happen. I'm not sure about the Attorney General's office in Texas. I just no idea, and I honestly
don't have a
chance to check it out. But at any rate, let's see. Is Kansas City a sanctuary city?
No, not to my knowledge. Although I think the mayor is very, very sympathetic with welcoming all immigrants, and I think without overtly saying, unless Bill's heard him say it, I don't think he's ever said we're a sanctuary city, but I don't think that he said that the police will comply and become an arm of the U.S. government in enforcing ICE regulations.
I don't know,
but I don't think so.
Well, then if perhaps somebody out there does know and has an opinion on it, the headline that I have is sanctuary cities are narrowly defined, and that was the Justice Department's effort, I think, to try to cool the temperature on this one a little bit in terms of what will and will not be done by the Justice Department. The many, I think it's at least 100 major cities in the country that have declared themselves sanctuary cities.
Yeah.
As far as I know, means that the police are not obligated to act as an arm of immigration, ICE.
Yeah, we need to take a break. We're going to come back to those topics and a bunch more, and we'll be right back after these messages here at Religion on the Line. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO 103.7, 710 AM, and also KMAJ 1440. In Topeka over there, now a syndicated partner in this enterprise of a Sunday morning. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
Michael, you're mentioning of Mayor Landrieu's description and eloquent declamation, if you will, of the Confederate monuments reminds me there's no more appropriate time than have that discussion than this weekend. Memorial Day, as it's being touted around the country, is not just about the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. It's not just about Vietnam, Korea, World War II, even World War I. It began as a as Decoration Day, and in the by and by, after the Civil War, and it was a way to honor those who had fallen in battle, and it was a moment for national grief to be expressed, and hopefully for some healing to happen, and also it participates in a millennia long tradition of honoring, if not decorating, at least honoring the sites where our beloveds are buried. So that's something to remember this weekend. Were you finished with all your topics? I don't think you
see. I've got two more.
Two more, okay.
I don't know, Bill, if you saw an item about Pope Francis, some of his folks trying to seek truce with Breakoff Priests, which is the Society of St. Pius X. And the article actually suggests that he may have a better chance than his predecessors because of summarizes the Nixon to China effect, given that the Pope's bona fides with the more, and it's hard, I don't like this term, but the more liberal elements of the church, that he might be able to successfully reconcile the Breakoff an excommunicated group, is it not?
You know, if you ask them, they'll deny it, and there's some question about what exactly is their canonical status. I don't think they are. I think recently under Benedict started this dialogue. It's a whole can of worms, but basically what Rabbi Michael's talking about is Archbishop Lefebvre, he had started a movement of priests to preserve the Mass as it was said before it was changed in 1967, I think. And
anti-Vatican II.
Yeah. Originally it was a movement in which it was an order of priests that were just preserving the Mass, and their justification was, well, there's a lot of people that are still used to this old form, and we want to keep that. We want to preserve that. And it was a good mission. I mean, preserving.
Did they
the
really want to just preserve that, or didn't they want to do away with the new Mass?
Well,
They did, didn't they?
I think ostensibly when it started, it was let's preserve the mass, and it was a good mission, but it attracted a lot of people who were unhappy and upset with with the reforms of Vatican II. Change always brings about pushback, and it became sort of a place for everybody that was dissatisfied with what was happening as a result of the reforms and didn't like the reforms, and the movement, it became a movement that was sort of a resist. It turned into sort of a de facto resistance movement, and basically the thing that Lefebvre did that crossed the line, mm-hmm. was he ordained four priests. He made them bishops, because an archbishop has that sacramental power, despite being forbidden by Rome to do that. You know, when a bishop's ordained, the Pope has to sign off on that. That's canon law, and to do so is a excommunicable offense. And so after Lefebvre did that, John Paul II issued a letter saying, hey, that's an excommunicable offense. You're sort of de facto excommunicated by that. But it wasn't like a formal declaration. And so their canonical status of their union with Rome. I mean, the church does not like people breaking away. The church doesn't like priests and bishops breaking away and doing their own thing. It's not good for the faithful, and it really confuses the faithful. And I've witnessed the Vatican doing all she can to try to restore union. So that's been going on for a long time. And the people who tend to fall into the Lefebvre movement, a lot of them are they're very strong and ardent in their faith. But I mean, without saying disparaging things about them, a lot of times they kind of zero in on the liturgy and speak as if they are the true church, where we're the real church and the rest of the church is not. And that's very problematic. So I've always been of the school. But if you ask more, you say, well, you can't be in this church, you're excommunicated. They'll say, oh, no, we're not. And you'll get into a very long, long conversation.
Who gets to say about that? Who gets to say about that? And I know you're trying to be. You're trying to be welcoming so that, that you can actually live out what St. Francis seems to be trying to do, right?
Pope, he's not saint yet, Bob.
Bob, excuse me, Pope Francis, he is trying to do, which is to welcome them back and to say, but I will bet he will say, these are the conditions which, you know, you can be welcomed back. Yeah. And Lefebvre is still excommunicated. The other archbishop...
Yeah, he is deceased.
Yeah, he's
but can't they do this? You know, what do you call it? In absentia, and also after death, they can lift the excommunication.
The thing about excommunication is it's a corrective action. It's not a punishment. It's not a punitive. It's not meant to be a censor. It's meant to be sort of more of an intervention where the church is saying, look, what you're doing is very serious, and you need to come back. It's meant to bring people back. And sometimes people get upset because they want to say, well, the church really should, because they look at excommunication as a censure, as a formal declaration of, oh, what you've done is bad. And that's not what it's set up for. It's a big can of worms, but I mean, just because you're excommunicated doesn't always mean you are out of the mystical body. In fact, there have been times where the church has misapplied excommunication, and there's some canonized saints that during part of their life they had been excommunicated. So it's something, and I'm not a canon lawyer, but I just know it can get kind of complicated. I also think the Vatican has really been trying to bring the society that Pius X back into the fold. So I don't think their status now would be excommunicated. I don't know what it would be.
Well, I'm just saying his status.
Their world headquarters here are here. So if you're part of the
really
the world headquarters, is
one of their it's in St. Mary's, Kansas. So
okay,
so
we'll be right back after these messages. Excommunication or no? We're going to be right back after these messages at 576-7710. Give us a call at Religion on the Line here at KCMO Talk Radio, KMAJ as well. This is not yet appropriate because time is not yet tight. You know, we got Booker T and MGs here this morning on Religion on the Line. It's so good to hear this music. Thank you, Rick Turner, our Cracker Jack superb producer, getting some of our favorite music going. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Fedek, Rabbi Emeritus Temple B'nai Yehuda. Can we? I want to ask a couple questions. When we went to the break, we were talking about the Society of Pius the Tenth. Bill, I don't recall the exact phrase used, but it was sort of an excommunication. Does excommunication require a formal ceremony, or is simply being informed by church official that you are excommunicated sufficient?
There are some actions which one can take that is a de facto excommunication.
Uh-huh.
One would be if a woman were to deliver, a Catholic is deliberately procured an abortion or helped with an abortion, uh-huh. That would I forget what the term is, but by the very act of it, that excommunicates you. I think there's five things that can be ordaining a bishop without approval, that I think is an act that excommunicates. So there's some things.
Automatic, I think. Yeah,
it's an automatic excommunication. But again, excommunication is not so much a censure, not so much a meant to publicly shame or humiliate people. It's meant more as the church saying, look, do you really mean to do this? You need to know that this particular action or this particular teaching puts you outside of the church. The act of doing this separates you from the mystical body of Christ. And the intent is always to bring the person back. Now, sometimes if there is a person of authority, like a bishop or a cardinal or a theologian, and they're teaching something that is contrary to church teaching, there will be times where the church has excommunicated that or said that by teaching this, you will, if you persist in this, you will be excommunicated. And there have been theologians that have recanted or moved back from the edge. But sometimes people get upset. Like they say, well, why doesn't the Pope should excommunicate this politician or that politician? And it's a failure to understand what excommunication's about, which is really trying to restore the relationship. So it's sort of like the wife who wants to be with her husband, but has to at sometimes maybe put her foot down and say, look, if you continue to have this emotional affair with your secretary at work, and you continue to divulge the your intimate emotional life and all our family secrets to this woman, you can't live in the house anymore. And until you change your behavior, you won't be welcome back in the house. But her intent is, I want to get you back in the house. I want to get you back. I want to restore the union, but you need to know certain behavior disrupts that. And you can't have it both ways. That's kind of what excommunication is meant, is sort of an intervention of, you can't you can't have it both ways. So,
well, where I was going was just, I'm curious if there had to be a formal ceremony. You know, in movies where they have something that looks like a mass and they extinguish candles rather than light candles. You know, that's not the case.
You know, I'd have to ask a canon lawyer. I know that's happened in the past.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe if there is a formal declaration, so. It's on the books, and I'm sure they can. I'm sure there's a ceremony for it, but
okay.
But it doesn't have to be done.
More importantly, yeah. I had always been, I shouldn't say told. My impression is that the excommunication, the issues were twofold, not the excommunication. The issue one is authority, vis-a-vis the Society of Pius X, and the other is. A notion that it opposes that other faith communities have a truth, as opposed to that there's a monopoly that is only for the universal one true Roman Catholic Church. Are you aware of that at all?
Well, as I said earlier, the Society of St. Pius X, I prefer to call them Lefebvreites because they're really followers of Marcel Lefebvre.
Uh-huh.
Who used the name of a holy Catholic saint. Pope Pius X was a great pope, but it's more of a movement, and it attracts a lot of people who want to dissent from the church.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's very ironic because they criticize the Protestant influence on Vatican II, but then they go about, this is my own personal opinion, they go about behaving like Protestants, meaning, you know, we don't like what the church is doing, so we're going to go do our own thing. And maybe we could I know St. Mary's, Kansas is one of their international headquarters, so maybe perhaps some of our listeners are associated with that movement. But getting to your question, Michael, it tends to attract a lot of people of a certain perspective, a dissenting perspective, and then they kind of become, this is my own experience with talking to them, they kind of become echo chambers of certain views. So, you know, there some views that I've been in conversations and I've heard people express was, well, you know, officially they do acknowledge the ordinary form of the Roman Rite, which is the mass most Catholics are going to participate in today, but they'll say ours is better. And and I've even heard the analogy of, well, the old form of the mass, the extraordinary form, or the Tridentine mass in Latin, that's like filet mignon, and the mass, the way it's said now, it's like a McDonald's hamburger.
But they're saying more. They're saying it's not just better. Yeah. They're saying any other form of mass is inauthentic and invalid.
Well, not, see, that's the word.
Aren't they saying that?
It gets tricky because who's saying what? You really don't have any central authority.
No, we do. I mean, you do. The Pope says you do it this way. We've included Latinate masses, but they say no. It is only Latinate, only with the priest back. And aren't they saying basically any other form is invalid? Why can't we describe them as being schismatic and against the order of the Catholic Church?
Well, let me just jump in. My understanding is that the Pope is trying to avoid.
I know.
Schism. Yeah.
But my point is this: is you've got four bishops that are in an irregular situation, and that at the time was schismatic when they were ordained and they consented to that, the Pope acknowledged, hey, that is a sort of ipso facto schismatic act. But the church has not, I think, ever declared them formally schismatic. And the question is, it attracts a bunch of people who want to dissent, and they all have different opinions. So you talk to some of them, and they'll say, the seat is vacant. The Pope is not. We haven't had a real Pope since before Vatican II.
We've heard that on this show.
Yeah, you know, you've talked to others that'll say, no, the Pope, you know, he's really the Pope, but he's just, you know. So it's more of an attitude, and it's more of a movement, and there's not necessarily like they become kind of an echo chamber for one another, and they sort of reflect views. But there's also, I mean, there's a lot of good people who want to be pious that kind of get swept into this. I mean, my opinion is you probably should stay away from this movement because if it looks like a duck and it's, you know, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. So they do behave in a, I would say, a schismatic fashion.
You're Bill, you've been remarkable in your effort to try to be generous, and I'm saluting that. I really am. I don't know these folks other than the occasional call we've gotten from people who claim to be real Catholics as opposed to the Catholics. You know, but it does lead to my last one, and we're almost up against the break. So, and that is this whole environment in America, most recently evidenced in college graduations, of people walking out on speakers, of not wishing to hear alternative views. I wonder what, if anything, our listeners think we can do that might change the environment so that whether it's a college campus or a business convention, that we can hear the people who have views other than our own. That's my last thing, guys.
Very good, Michael. And we will come back to that one. We'll segue into some other things. We're going to take a break, pay some bills, and we'll be right back after these messages. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Talk Radio, also KMAJ. You may be, if you're in the heart of the country here in GKC, looking at 710 AM or 103.7 FM, thank you for allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning. If you're over in Topeka, you're part of the syndication, then you're at KMAJ at 1440. Thank you. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple Ben Yehuda.
Michael, did you have
That was your last one.
Okay, all right.
Blog.
Bill, what topics do you want to bring up this morning?
Well, today the Catholic Church, along with many other Christian communities, celebrates the Feast of the Ascension of our Lord. It is the day, it's a feast that goes back to ancient times, and is universally accepted in Christian churches all over the world. 40 days after the resurrection, Jesus ascended into heaven. And I have always reflected on that as a celebration of the body, a celebration that the body is good, that God became man, and that humanity is lifted up into heaven. Bob, as you know, one of the first heresies the church contended with was the heresy of docetism, which was the idea that God only appeared to become man, that God was actually always spiritual, and the physical form he took was just an appearance, much like in Greek poetry, like Homer, sometimes the gods would take on physical form and walk among us, but it was just an illusion. They weren't really physical. And I had a history of religion professors tell me, you know, for most of Western thought, the idea was that the material principle was evil and the spiritual principle was good, you know, so spirit good, body bad. And it's only in modern times that we've sort of flipped that around where we believe that the physical is real and we doubt the existence of the spiritual. So the ascension really is a celebration of all of creation is good, and God proved it by ascending by his own power with the body. And so we anticipate the celebration of Pentecost. And I'd be curious, you know, for a long time, this feast was always observed on Holy Thursday. In fact, it's called Ascension Thursday. Some churches would call it Holy Thursday, but it historically was called Ascension Thursday because the Bible several times speaks of it 40 days, and Thursday is 40 days after the resurrection. But many churches, our archdiocese and Diocese of Kansas City, they've moved the feast to the following Sunday. And when the people are going to show up. And it's interesting too, because Memorial Day, originally a Memorial Day was May 30th, but back in 1967, Lyndon Johnson moved it to was it the last Monday of the month of May?
Correct.
And some people say, well, that takes away from Memorial Day because it's less of a holiday dedicated to remembering people who died protecting this country. It just it's turned into a 3-day weekend. And I think some people would make that criticism of when you move a feast day, it can have that effect too, where it gets lost. The significance of it gets lost. And I'd be curious what our callers think about that.
Okay. Let's go to, you may have other topics, Bill, but let's get Richard in here because he's been waiting a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Richard, you've got religion on the line and you want to talk about a sanctuary city. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. And also, since I've been waiting, I did want to ask about the views on the split between Orthodoxy and the Roman Church back when it happened and that excommunication. It's my understanding that the sanctuary cities matter was a matter where if someone in the Old Testament was accused of murder, they were granted safe passage until they could have trial. Do you know any more on that?
Absolutely, but I think you're conflating two different things. The so-called, what you're using, and I can't think of the English word at the moment, but whether it's sanctuary cities or not, but cities of refuge, that's what they're called in the Hebrew Bible. And that's where the so-called person who inadvertently kills another, before you had a court system, etc., you had a blood avenger system, and this was so that they could seek justice rather than only vengeance. There were six of them, according to the biblical tradition. But that's not the same thing as sanctuary cities, which have simply adopted the notion of sanctuary, which is an ancient rite. And for example, it's more commonly it would be associated with sacred buildings like a church. And in many churches, in fact, I'm aware of a number, where there are persons taking refuge from the authorities in the church precincts themselves. That's the conflation that you're missing here. But a sanctuary city is simply adopting that term that you're safe here.
Did that answer your question, Richard?
Yeah. And then if the Catholic in your group could address the matter of the split between the Orthodox and the
you mean
Roman
you
church?
Want us to go back to 1054.
Yeah, right.
To the
okay.
In 1 minute.
Banning the globe.
Let me just say one quick thing about sanctuary cities. I was sharing off the air with Bob that it's very problematic when you use local police to enforce federal immigration law because it has the chilling effect of having immigrant families not want to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know this, but most immigrant households are mixed status. 85% are mixed status, meaning somebody in the house is here without documentation. They've either overstayed their visa or they have an irregular legal situation. And it really makes everybody unsafe when you have people afraid to call the police. I used to live over in Argentina in KCK where there's a lot of immigrant families. And the last thing I wanted was for someone to be robbed and them not call the police, because guess what? It's only going to be a matter of time before my house gets robbed because the police don't know, hey, these crimes are happening. There's a problem here. So I think people lose sight of that when they hear sanctuary city. They just hear disobedience, but they don't realize there's a prudence to enforcing the law and police's primary responsibility is public safety. So there's a public safety aspect that often doesn't get talked about. So I just wanted to get that out there. And then we've got time to talk about the schism, but what did you want to know about the mutual excommunication of 1054, Richard?
Well, I didn't really know too much about it other than the kind of the thought that the patriarchs in the East had regarded previously that the Pope in Rome was the first among equals.
Okay.
And then the Roman Church seemed to kind of puff that up.
You're welcome to stay and hold on or listen in later. We got to go to a break now, Richard. What do you want to do?
Well, if I could stay on.
Okay, you hold on. We're going to be back, pay some bills, do some news, back here in just a few minutes here on Religion on the Line, 576-7710.